Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by our super producer, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
So, Jason, we got to open today with some of the craziest baseball news I've heard in a while. Yeah, you're laughing because it's some of the craziest. It generated the most hits on our Facebook page out of any article that we've posted ever. Apparently, everybody was kind of intrigued by this. Dodgers Cuban import infield prospect Alex Guerrero had his ear partially bitten off by teammate Miguel Olivo in a scuffle the other day. Jason, what are just thoughts? Talk about this, Jason. Give me some thoughts on this. What's going on here?
I'm gonna reuse what Tom Hamilton said last night on the Indians broadcast. If you want to stay in an organization, the worst thing you can do is bite the ear of one of the top prospects.
That article should have been titled "Journeyman Catcher Bites His Way Off Team."
You know what my other thought was? What is it with, like, you know, backup catchers or mediocre catchers named Miguel having beefs with young talented players?
That is a very good, yeah, very valid point. Do you think Trevor Bauer is thankful that he has his ears now?
Yeah, he's probably like, oh, I'm glad Miguel Montero just made fun of my rapping.
Instead of biting my ear off. I can't wait until the Albuquerque Isotopes have a special night for that, though. They're going to have like a bobblehead night for Alex Guerrero with part of his ear missing.
They probably will.
That's why I love minor league baseball. Maybe we should be proactive and get Greg Coleman, see if we can get him to have a Alex Guerrero rubber ear night or something.
See if the Seawolves will sign Miguel Olivo for a day.
I'd want that guy far away from my roster.
Yeah, he'd probably like bite off Ramon Cabrera's ear.
Yeah, that ear was probably worth, that little part of his ear he bit off, that was probably worth at least, I would say, $80,000 of his $28
million. Probably.
That was an $80,000 chunk of his ear that he bit off.
Could be.
You don't want to go biting the ears of $28 million prospects. Not a good way to endear yourself to the organization.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if he's released soon.
Into the custody of a good local mental hospital? Is that where you mean he's released to?
Could be.
All right. Well, we got bigger, better things to move on to today, right?
That's right.
All right. Let's move on to those bigger, better things. We're going to start today by talking about what's going on in Pittsburgh, smoothly transition into what's happening in Cleveland, and wrap up with a little segment that we haven't had in quite some time. We're going to wrap up with some tweet mails.
Tweet mails.
Love that segment, by the way. It's mostly the drop that you created for that segment that gets me all excited about it.
It is a pretty good drop.
If you haven't heard this drop before, you just wait.
Stick around.
It's coming. All right, Jason, let's open up with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Pittsburgh currently sits at 18-26 on the season. That is, if we are putting things in perspective of good and not good, that is a not good record to have in the sport of professional baseball right now. That is 8 games behind division leading Milwaukee, and just generally speaking, pretty bad. I mean, I didn't like sit down and actually, you know, look at, I mean, I know like Tampa Bay is struggling. I think they have like 18 or 19 wins, and Houston's pretty awful. And the Cubs in our own division are awful, so that's keeping us out of the basement. But Pittsburgh's right down there with one of the worst records in baseball. They're just getting waxed on the road. Nothing good is happening away from PNC Park, and they're 500 at home, which is, I guess, moderately good things are happening at PNC Park. So I don't know. There's been so many issues this season. It's like everything that went right last season when we were all happy talking about, yay, baseball's fun. Everything that was like that last season is just completely going the exact opposite way this season. I say it every week, but it feels like the exact opposite of last season. Well, Starling Marte, he's been missing games lately. He's had back leg issues. He left Sunday's game, the second game against the Yankees, with some hamstring tightness. He came out and said that he was feeling okay right afterwards, and he was right back in the lineup the next game they had. But it's just kind of alarming to see these injuries piling up. And this was after he got plunked in the hand last year and had to miss significant chunks of the season because of his hit by pitches. So I don't know. I don't know if you guys have any comparable players like that. Well, I mean, Kipnis has kind of dealt with injuries in his short tenure in Cleveland, hasn't he?
He's only had one other actual DL stint than the one he's on right now. I mean, he's usually, you know, banged up because he's a dirt bag.
Right.
But trying to think.
I mean, he's out. What is he out now with his oblique now?
Yeah.
He's out with his oblique?
He's out with
what was he out?
Like 2 or 3 years ago, he missed a couple weeks with a hamstring strain.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's kind of... Marte's only been on the DL that one time as well. So, I mean, maybe kind of comparable. Like, just constantly seems just kind of nicked up. And we talked about this. Did we talk about this with Ben Jedlicek, how health is actually a skill? I mean, being able to stay healthy over the...
Yeah, I think
over the course of a season is, you know, it's a skill at some point when you break it down.
Well, yeah. So look at, you know, like Carlos Beltran, he's always hurt. Alan Craig. I mean, how much value does Alan Craig lose because of the time he misses?
Right. So you just kind of hope this doesn't turn into something that's chronic, I suppose, would be the crux of me bringing this up. You know, you want him to be out there and playing. So, I don't know. Just something to keep an eye on, I suppose. On a more positive note, Neil the Real Deal Walker, also known as the Pittsburgh Kid, as everybody likes to mention every time he hits a home run on the television broadcast, hit his 9th home run this season.
Who calls him Pittsburgh Kid?
Every blast and walk and Brown and... Yeah. I don't know if Wayner does. I kind of tune Wayner out whenever he's talking, but yeah, everybody calls him Pittsburgh Kid. So he hit his 9th home run Sunday against the Yankees. That was in the first game of the doubleheader. So when you're looking at Neil Walker, he's at 9 home runs this season already. He had 16 all of last season, which was, you know, another career high for him. You're kind of looking at, well, what's happening with Neil Walker that's different this season than last season. Now, we know last season he was kind of banged up for part of the season, which probably contributed to his ups and downs in his production. But I think a big thing to kind of take away from this season, if you look at his career, so Neil Walker's a switch hitter. In his career against lefties, he has a triple slash at 265, 322, 348 against left-handed pitching. So that is, he's batting right-handed. He's had 34... Actually, this isn't... I don't think he faced a lefty yesterday. He has 34 plate appearances against lefties this season, and he's tuning them up to a line, a triple slash of 345, 424, 483.
Whew.
Now, you don't want to overreact again, because you always, you know, you got this sample size going on, and you know that's going to come back to earth at some point. But I think it's just kind of reassuring to see, okay, well, this is something that... this is an area that I could improve on. You know, he has one of his 9 home runs right-handed, just destroyed, I want to say maybe a Jonathan Broxton fastball when he was in Cincinnati. I mean, it was off the upper deck in Cincinnati, just destroyed that pitch. So he's got the stroke to be productive from that side. It's just being more consistent. So this season in 45 plate appearances, something else that's kind of reassuring to see. In 45 plate appearances this season, when he's hit the ball up the middle, he is just blistering the ball. He's hitting 378 in plate appearances when he hits the ball up the middle. So if you compare that to last season, all of last season in 140 plate appearances where he hit the ball up the middle, he hit 245. So I think, and if you've been watching Neil Walker and watching this season, then kind of what's the difference between Walker last season and Walker this season? He's clearly driving the ball better than he was last season. You know, injuries probably had something to do with that in some capacity. You know, he was dogged most of the first half of the season by them before he hit the DL.
I was actually going to interrupt and say, you want to talk about a guy who you, like, injury-wise, who you don't want Starling Marte to turn into, wouldn't it be Neil Walker?
Yes, yes. Just, like, constantly, yeah, it's constantly those nagging injuries and then, like, a little 15-day DL stint here. Yeah,
it's not, like, anything major, but it's like, oh, 15 more days.
Right.
For, like, 6-8 weeks, oh, 15 more days.
And I should have pulled up his splits. I mean, you can go check them out on Baseball Reference. But you go look. He came off the DL and was healthy for most of the second half of the season. And if you go look at his splits for the second half of the season last year, he was his numbers were significantly better than the first half of the season.
Right.
So, I think it's a positive thing. It's, you know, you're seeing him hit lefties as a righty. You know, there was one point last season where writers were asking him, like, what do you think about dropping switch hitting? You know, it had gotten that bad. So it's good to see him kind of putting that to rest, I suppose. So do you want to hear a crazy statistic?
Sure.
You might not believe it. It's kind of crazy. But this is according to Tom Singer on the Twitter box. But the Pirates have scored 43% of their runs in the seventh inning or later this season.
Oh!
43% of their runs have come in the last three innings of the game.
Not exactly getting ahead early.
That's not good. I would go as far as to say that's very bad.
Yeah.
That's very bad. I know I've brought it up multiple times this season. It puts so much pressure on your pitchers when they can't go out and give up two runs and feel like they're still safe. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like, they'll be in the fifth inning. You know, Gerrit Cole will be dealing through, like, five innings. Pittsburgh will put, like, one run on the board. And then he'll give up two runs in the fifth and come away down a run. Because 43% of their runs are coming in the seventh inning or later. Like, that's absurd.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
That is absurd.
And it kind of comes down to that, I don't know, you hear Keith Law all the time say, you know, these guys are professionals, you know, they're going to go out there and do their jobs. They're people, man. At some point, as a pitcher, when you're looking at that scoreboard and you're seeing, like, I just gave up two runs and now I'm probably getting, like, we're going to lose this game because I gave up two runs, that's got to wear on you. It really does.
Yeah.
That's insane. So tonight, as as of course I bring up this statistic, tonight Pittsburgh goes out and puts up, like, four runs in the first inning. So
trying to maybe prove you wrong, man.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they've just either that or somebody had a stern talking to. They had Bob Nutting come down from the owner's box and talk sternly to them about that. But here's the funny part. Wandy Rodriguez is pitching tonight.
Oh boy, gonna need those runs.
Yeah, you know what happened in the second inning?
He gave up four runs.
Six runs.
Oh man.
Pittsburgh scored four runs in the first inning. And now they're losing 6-4 in the second inning.
Isn't that the way it goes?
Wandy didn't even make it out. They had Vin Mazzaro's in already.
Oh,
ridiculous.
That is.
That's Pirates.
What are you going
to do? This is kind of how I expected the podcast to be going last season.
Yeah? You weren't very, like, optimistic, huh?
Well, I mean, I was optimistic in that I guess I'm just always optimistic about the Pirates, because if I wasn't, why would I watch anymore? but this season starting to wear on me. When we're just talking about how they don't score any runs, they go out, score four runs, and then Wandy Rodriguez gives up just six runs because apparently he's just a broken baseball player.
I'm pretty sure I called that. that Wandy Rodriguez is not good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it doesn't help his fastball velocity is like 85 or whatever it is now. I mean, he's literally, I think, just broken as a baseball player. Anyways, talking about outpourings of runs. Is outpouring the word I wanted? I don't think that's the word I wanted to use, was it?
That could work.
Could you have an outpouring of runs? Like an outpouring of support?
Sure.
All right, yeah. Anyway, so Pittsburgh started this weird two-game series with Baltimore. And last night, Chris Davis must have got the memo that Jason has a little wager on him not receiving any MVP votes, because last night he smashed 3 home runs in the routing. That puts him on 6 for the season.
Carl, you know, Chris Davis, he can go fly a kite, man. I'm done with him.
You've had it up to here with Chris Davis?
I don't want any part of him.
You can't see because this is radio, but I'm putting, when I say you've had it up to here, my hand above my head. Have you had it literally up to that far?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't get me excited.
No? You really think he's going to just slide back into obscurity, don't you?
I have no confidence in him.
I bet he gets an MVP vote this season.
One? That's at least wager? He's going to get one?
Well, that was the over-under on our wager.
No.
Yeah, it was. We said if Chris Davis, would you consider Chris Davis to slide into obscurity, him receiving 0 MVP votes this season? That was your wager. I got it written down over here. I keep track of these things.
When did I make this?
We on the podcast titled, I believe it was titled, Chris Davis's Slide into Obscurity.
That was last year, though, right?
Yeah, but that was predicting this season.
I thought it was about 45 home runs. That's the wager I remember.
No. It was, we said, what would you consider his slide into obscurity? And you agreed that it would be 0 MVP votes this season.
We're gonna have to check the tape on that.
Yeah, we'll go check it. Anyways, let's keep moving forward, I suppose.
No, you can talk about Chris Davis more. He hit
3 home runs last night. I'm done talking about Chris Davis. He just smashed 3 home runs in my face last night trying to watch this game. Ruined a really good time. Can we talk about something more positive?
He's gonna get all tuned up against Wandy tonight.
I should go see what he did. I'm gonna go check the box score while I'm talking about this. Gregory Polanco still is just trapped in AAA obscurity.
Still just stuck on my fantasy roster, unable to play.
Mine as well, man. I've got him in a couple leagues, just waiting for him. And yeah, I mean, everybody's complaining about it, and yes, it's a broken system. That's with that Super 2 status, and it shouldn't happen that way. But there's no way you're calling him up right now. You're going to wait the extra 2 or 3 weeks because it's going to save you millions of dollars in the long run. There's no other way to, and you know,
really, again, are you gonna say there's no other way? Because I've spent the past 4 weeks arguing the other way.
Neil Huntington is never going to do that because it's just going to cost them too much money.
When this season tanks and you can hear a pin drop in PNC Park at the end of the year, you'll be
happy. They're used to that, number one. Number two, Polanco's not going to solve all of the issues in Pittsburgh.
But I'm saying, this is the same point I've been making all along. They have not built up enough goodwill to have a tanker of a season.
No, definitely not. And, I mean, it's going to be too late by the time they decide to call him up.
Yeah, which doesn't make any sense.
You know, you're going to call him up and you're going to be 10 games back or whatever it is.
If he's good, you're never going to pay him the extra money.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my whole argument.
If that's just the way it is, I don't know. I don't know, man. Well, if he's good, you're going to have to pay him the extra money because of starting that arbitration clock early. So if Gregory Polanco comes up and he's just tearing it up and you call him up 2 weeks before the Super 2 deadline, You start his arbitration clock a year early. So, you know, and we've already talked about this. You're looking at another probably somewhere between $8 and $12 million, maybe more.
But he'll never get to arbitration if he's good. And if he's good and he gets to arbitration, he's not staying. It doesn't matter.
Right, but it does matter for the Pirates because those extra millions of dollars that you're paying him could be spent somewhere else if he's not going to re-sign in Pittsburgh.
Well,
so that's why.
Take their extra like $4 million it'll save when they sign him to an extension, and they can use it to get a retirement home for Wandy Rodriguez.
Maybe buy him a plane ticket back to Houston.
Yeah.
Was there a return to sender sticker we can throw on that?
What I'm saying, they still need they need to be relevant. It's the same problem the Indians have. You can't have these ups and downs. They're not
right.
Season tickets.
Being 12 games back, and then calling up Gregory Polanco is going to be a whisper in the screaming of baseball analysis. You know, people will be excited for a day or two, and then when everybody realizes Pittsburgh is 12 games back, it's not going to matter. I mean, Polanco can come up and win Rookie of the Year with Pittsburgh playing like this, and it's not going to matter. I don't know. I mean, but you could literally take all of the right fielders from Pittsburgh, drop them off on a deserted island, and Neil Huntington would still have to say, Polanco's still got some stuff to work on down in Indianapolis, even though he could be hitting like 800 with a 350 OPS plus and stealing 560 bases in 32 attempts. It just doesn't matter.
That's just because they're cheap.
It is, yeah. Otherwise, oh, yeah.
Call it. And that's not a good way to run a baseball team.
No, not in the most capitalistic sport in the country. I would agree with that.
I mean, but even the teams that aren't spending just boatloads of cash, there comes a time when it's time to compete, man. It's time to compete. You got to pony up. Same with the Indians. I'm not saying they aren't guilty of it, but wouldn't you like to have AJ Burnett right now?
Oh yeah, I'm telling you, Huntington, on his deathbed, is gonna have to come to grips with that. I bet he goes to confession once a week and confesses about how he messed that up. Forgive me, Father.
So they're 10 games back or whatever. How do they get out of this hole? What do they got to do?
I don't think you can. You know, we talked about this at the beginning of the season when we were looking at the Pirates before the season started. They didn't upgrade their offense. So
Gregory Polanco.
Right. Well, you look at their offense from last season. There were no upgrades to the offense, and it still hasn't been upgraded with Polanco down in AAA.
Oh, I'm agreeing. I'm just saying you have an upgrade. You're just choosing not to use
it. Right. Yeah, right. However you want to phrase it, yes. Okay. So then
– they did get Ike Davis. Come on, man.
Yeah, we did get Ike Davis, so there's that. Then you look at pitching. So pitching is, you know, AJ Burnett's gone. You were looking at, hopefully, Jameson Taillon was on a Gerrit Cole track, who's now had, get you know, Talion's done with Tommy John. I don't see things getting better.
So
because all of the stuff that you need to happen to get better. You know, there's no way to fix the problems mid-season with this kind of stuff.
Well, let me ask you then, man, because every night Tom Hamilton does the Major League scoreboard, and when he gets to the Pirates, it always starts the same. You know it's the Pirates before he gives the score. He goes, oh boy. And it's always like, the Pirates are losing again.
Yeah.
And last night he said, so I'm going to ask you if you agree with this statement.
All right.
He said, the Pirates are probably the biggest disappointment of the season so far.
I would very much agree with that. Yes.
All right.
I mean, a lot of people in the industry were down on them at the beginning of the season.
But not this far.
But I think from a fan perspective, you know, you look at how they packed PNC Park last season. You know, the second highest attendance ever. Everybody was – they were media darlings last season, winning 94 games out of nowhere.
Right.
And, you know, like they're, you start looking at the, you know, their run differential is negative 25 right now. You know, regardless of how you, how good of a measure you think run differential may or may not be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's telling that you can see all of the teams that are at the top of all of the divisions have green numbers with a plus sign next to them. And the Pirates are at negative 25. And they're next to last in their division. So I mean, maybe they try and go make a splash for Kendrys Morales. Maybe after the draft, I don't know. Even then, that doesn't fix the issues with, you know, the bullpen has been okay. You know, they've blown a lot of saves. I think a lot of that, you know, some of that had to do with Greeley, obviously, and some of that's just had to do with inconsistent arms at the end of the bullpen. The bullpen's been okay. It hasn't been spectacular like it was last, you know, last season it was one of the best bullpens in Major League Baseball. You know, again, the starting pitching has regressed. I would be surprised if there was a major turnaround, and I don't know what, I guess, would precipitate a major turnaround from them mid-season, but who knows?
Well, FanGraphs has the projected finish for the Pirates at 77-84.
Okay.
I guess that doesn't come out right, but there's decimals in there. So there's like
a
win hanging out there in decimal land, but they have the rest of the season winning percentage at 503. So basically saying like they'll get somewhat turned around, but they just it's too far gone.
Right, they're not going to be able to make up the ground, the hole that they've dug themselves in already.
And they have an 11% chance of making the playoffs.
Yeah, which I think would be a very generous 11%.
0.6% of making the World Series.
So can I tell you this as we're talking? I figured like this was as good a place to interrupt as any. Pittsburgh is back on top again, 7-6.
That sounds like the Indians game today.
What is happening? Sometimes life just does not make any sense, Jason.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So 7-6. Vin Mazzaro's in line for this win.
Oh, Vin Mazzaro.
Good Lord. Can we talk about Cleveland? Because I feel like things are going somewhat better in Cleveland.
Well, sort of. So let's start with all the crazy roster moves that have been happening in Cleveland. Last week, our boy Jesus Aguilar got called up when they sent Danny Salazar back to Columbus.
Right, right.
They had enough of Danny Salazar, and frankly, I'm in 100% agreement with that. He needs to get straightened out, and the place to do that is Columbus. So then, this started a chain reaction. Because Salazar and McAllister had just been like laying eggs for the last 2 weeks, the bullpen was on like it was thin, all right? The bullpen was thin. So they said, okay, Nigel Morgan has to go on the disabled list. I don't know if you remember. Nigel Morgan was making an attempt to keep Corey Kluber's perfect game intact in like the sixth inning last week. And he was going to dive for the ball and then decided it was going to get by him if he dove for the ball. So he stopped and then he hurt his knee in the process.
Right, right.
So they called up Kyle Crockett, our boy, straight up from Akron to Cleveland. Then they called up TJ House and sent CC Lee back down.
Okay. Now,
at that point, they had like 9 people in the bullpen. That's the state of the Indians' rotation at the end of last week, okay? 9 people in the bullpen. Well, Danny Salazar's spot came up on Tuesday, and they had said right from the beginning, we're going to use Trevor Bauer. He's taking Danny Salazar's spot. So on Tuesday, they had to make some wholesale changes and kind of get reconfigured. So they activated Jason Giambi.
Okay.
He called up Trevor Bauer, and they called up Justin Sellers from Columbus, and they sent down Aguilar, House, and Jose Ramirez. The reason they sent Jose Ramirez down is just because he hasn't been playing very much. Because Mike Avilés is batting like 500 the last week. And if you want somebody to ride the pine and play like one or two games a week, Justin Sellers is your man.
Right.
Not Jose Ramirez. So anyway, so that's where we stood today. But we're not totally done because Jason Kipnis is going to be activated for a rehab assignment probably on Friday. He's going to get sent to Columbus. And he's probably going to get activated for the big league club, if all goes well, Monday or Tuesday. So someone else is going to have to go out. Most likely Justin Sellers will, you know, this is a short-term stay for him.
Right. Make the quick trip back.
Yeah. Although I should note that apparently Mike Avilés was giving Kipnis a hard time about saying he's going to come back Monday or Tuesday because there's a really good chance that they'll face Chris Sale one of those days.
Ooh, yeah.
Mike Avilés was like, I'm going to guess you're going to want me to play second base that night. Kind of rubbing it in Kipnis' face that he probably didn't want to come off the disabled list and face Chris Sale. But anyways, so that's where we were, right? So we start the weekend series against Oakland and proceed to lay an egg every night. Get swept by the A's. Dr. Garrett and I went to the game on Sunday. And it was a blowout. 13-3 or 2. Masterson started that game. He lasted 5 innings and gave up 7 runs, I think.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was ugly. He walked Coco Crisp 3 times in 5 innings.
No.
That's the kind of game it was. So we left there, Dr. Garrett and I, discussing how the Indians at that point were 19-25 and were 10.5 games out of first behind the Tigers. And I told him, and I wrote about it on Monday in Noise on the North Coast, that on Monday, they started a series against the Tigers, and that was about the most do-or-die series you're ever going to have in May. Because when we left that stadium, it really felt like they were going to get swept by the Tigers.
Right.
And, of course, every time you play the team that you're chasing, it's 2 games. So if they had gotten swept by the Tigers, they would have been back 16.5 games before Memorial Day. Oh, it makes me nauseous just thinking about it. But, they won on a walk-off on Monday night, okay? Kluber pitched a gem, and Cody Allen blew the save.
Oh, Kluber looked nasty. Just yeah, nasty.
He was nasty. And I have to go off for a second about using Cody Allen in that game. Because, like I said, Dr. Garrett and I were at the game on Sunday, where Cody Allen pitched in like the 7th inning of that disgusting game.
Okay.
He left with the bases loaded without getting an out. Now, I understand that was one outing in a game that was not going well for anyone. But isn't the whole point of bullpen by committee or closer by committee to use the guy who's pitching well?
Right, or at least put him in a favorable situation to succeed.
I just, like, to me, you really, really got to win this game against the Tigers, right? Kluber's pitched an awesome game, put you in a position to win the first game of the series, get right on the back on the right track, and use the guy that the day before, when there was no pressure, couldn't even get anybody out. It didn't make any sense to me. But luckily, Michael Brantley bailed him out with a walk-off homer in the 9th. So they won that game. Then, on Tuesday, it was Trevor Bauer against Justin Verlander. Again, you're thinking, ooh, probably the best matchup, right? Well, Bauer goes 6 innings and gives up 2 runs. Verlander goes like 6 or 7 innings and gives up 5 runs, and they end up winning the game. So you're like, now we're playing with house money here, right? We could end up sweeping them. except Max Scherzer was going to start today.
Oh, no.
Who had given up all of 12 runs in 52 innings so far this year.
Is it safe to say that is good?
That is good.
Yes. But
Indians got to him for 7 runs in 3 innings.
What?
Yeah.
What is this witchcraft?
Now, an interesting side note, Scherzer, man, he took it like on the chin for the Tigers bullpen. Because right now, for some reason that I didn't totally catch, the Tigers have a 6-man bullpen. So Scherzer actually stayed out there and pitched into like the 7th or 8th inning. So he got shellacked in the 2nd and 3rd innings, gave up 7 in those 2 innings, and then pitched like 5 more innings without giving up a run.
Right.
But anyways, McAllister pitched today for the Indians, and he got smoked once again. So the game was like 7-5, then tied at 7. Then Axford gave up 2 more runs, and the Tigers were winning 9-7. And you thought, oh, well, here goes the sweep, right? Till my boy, David Murphy, hits the 2-run homer in the 9th inning to tie the game.
Dude, he's been killing the ball.
He has been killing it. And then, in the 13th inning, the Indians win on a balk.
A balk off.
A balk off. And when you're watching it, if you didn't see it and you have like MLB TV or whatever, you should definitely go back and watch it, because Rayburn is up to bat. The bases are loaded. The camera's right on Rayburn because he's just stepping in the box, you know, and the camera's on him as he's doing his little ritual before he puts the bat up on his shoulder. And all of a sudden his arms just go straight up in the air and you're like, what happened? And it's because Al Albuquerque balked the winning run in. So now, instead of being 10.5 back, or at worst 16.5 back, the Indians will be, let's see, what would that be?
Right now, you guys are what? You're 7.5 back?
7.5 back, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
which, that could have ended up being a lot worse.
That could have been real ugly. So I shouldn't say it would have been 16.5. It would have been 13.5 back. That was a mistake.
Right, yeah.
So, where do we stand now? That's kind of the thing. Well, Kluber, like we said, I mean, he's just dealing. Like, he looks like an ace right now. Bauer and Tomlin have done a lot to stabilize this rotation. But Masterson is still struggling. And now, Zach McAllister, he's out on the edge, man. Like, he's gotten smoked his last 3-4 times out. I mean, you can't, you know, you already burned through Salazar, you already burned through Bauer. But TJ House is pitching really good, and he's a legitimate option, and he's left-handed, and which the Indians don't have any left-handed starters. I say if Callister doesn't get this turned around in another start or two, I wouldn't be surprised to see him give House a chance, because it's the same problem of using Salazar and Carrasco. You've got two guys who are just killing your bullpen. You know?
Right.
If one of them doesn't get straightened out, something's got to change. They're not going to get rid of Masterson. The only thing would be if they, you know, discover some kind of injury that's underlying all this. But if McAllister's struggling, they will option him out and probably bring up TJ House. Speaking of TJ House, so to finish that 13-inning game today, they had to end up using Josh Tomlin for 3 innings.
Ooh, that's not good. You never like having to do that.
And he's supposed to start tomorrow night in Baltimore. So, well, you'd say, okay, we'll call up TJ House. Or if you had to, call up Danny Salazar. Well, do you remember all that stuff at the beginning when those guys got sent back down? The way the rules read, unless there's an injury, you have to stay in the minors for 10 days once you get sent back down.
Oh, that wretched CBA always getting in the way.
So, unless Jason Giambi comes up lame all of a sudden, TJ House and Danny Salazar, they're not an option. And they're going to have to probably make a bullpen move, too. So, CC Lee's not an option either.
Yikes.
Now, again, this is all, you know, if there's no phantom injury, which Asdrubal Cabrera did get drilled in the kneecap in the last inning. So, I mean, I guess it's possible, but I really doubt it's that severe because he stayed in the game.
Right.
So, anyways, if you're looking at relievers, you're looking at – it's kind of actually slim pickings, even though some of these names you'll recognize. Mm-hmm. you could bring Vinny Pestano back. You could bring Nick Hagedorn back. You could go with old Scott Barnes. You could resurrect Blake Wood. Or you could call up Austin Adams and his 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Now, the more concerning thing is the starting pitching. You ready for these two names?
All right, throw them out there.
Travis Banwart.
Okay.
And Kyle Davies.
All right, okay, Kyle Davies. Now we're okay.
Kyle Davies is scheduled to pitch tomorrow, and Banwart is scheduled to pitch Friday. Davies just got promoted from AA like a few weeks ago. Banwart has actually been pitching okay recently, although he was like dreadful in spring training.
Yeah.
But that's what you're looking at. I cannot imagine them bumping everyone up. That seems like a very, very poor idea.
Right, yeah.
Not to mention the fact that ever since they made McAllister pitch on 3 days rest, he's stunk. So I think they might be a little leery of, you know, bumping someone up who's been doing well. So that's the situation in Cleveland. We dodged a bullet. we have three decent starters, but Justin Masterson is not one of them. And the defense is getting actually better. I mean, we still have our moments, but it's not the circus music constantly like it was before. So, yeah. That's the situation right now in Cleveland. Disaster averted.
Yeah, could have been a lot worse.
So, to my, you know, since we did it for the Pirates, Fangraphs has the updated projection for the Indians as 81 and 80. And like, again, there's decimal points in there. Going 517 the rest of the day, or rest of the way, with a 23% chance of making the playoffs and a 1.5% chance of making the World Series.
Well, those numbers are a little more optimistic than Pittsburgh's.
They are more optimistic. You know who has the greatest chance of making the World Series according to Fangraphs?
Do you know who has the greatest chance? I would guess Detroit or Oakland.
Detroit is number one at 17.5%, and Oakland's number two at 12.4%.
Woo!
You know what that's good. You know what the shocker is?
What?
The third highest team with the chance of making the World Series is a team that's actually in third place in their division right now.
St. Louis? No.
One of their best prospects just had his ear bitten off.
Whoa, the Dodgers.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know how that number comes out, but I guess it does.
All right.
Oh, interesting. I should mention, just because he's done so well, Michael Brantley is like a force right now.
Just killing it, isn't he?
He's batting over 300. He's batting 302, 370, 523.
Woo!
And his K rate is 8.3%. His walk rate's 8.9.
Woo!
I mean, that's some numbers right there, man.
Wow.
He went 4-for-7 today.
Wow. Yeah, he's makes you kind of forget about that Matt LaPorta character, doesn't he?
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're not watching Michael Brantley right now, I really, really think you're watching someone turn into, not, I'm not going to say a great player, but he's turning into more than just a good player.
Right.
I mean, he's turning into an all-star. Let's put it that way. When you're batting over 300 and not striking out but walking, that's – you're doing all right, man. You're doing all right. You know who's not doing all right?
Who? Carlos Santana.
Yeah, and he's the subject of the first tweet mail.
Ooh, yeah. We should play the drop. Can we play the drop?
Sure.
Tweet mails.
Okay, so we got some tweet mails going on, Jason.
Yeah.
From some of our faithful listeners.
Our faithful listeners, yeah.
Should I read our first one?
Sure.
First, since that's typically the order that you read things.
Yes.
First to second.
Or left, right.
Ooh, yes. Also, yeah, spatially, that would be how you would read things, left to right, top to bottom.
Right.
Okay, tweet mails. First tweet mail from faithful listener Dave in Carlisle. Carlisle's a city in Pennsylvania, right?
Yes, eastern PA.
Somewhere over like in the Philadelphia region of Pennsylvania?
Not that far. Harrisburg.
Harrisburg region. Okay. Over by Harrisburg. Dave in Carlisle asks, with Carlos Santana's batting average currently at 146, what should the Indians do with him? Jason, discuss.
Carlos Santana. Let me tell you what. In the right field seats on Sunday, there was not a lot of love for Carlos Santana among the crowd. Or Nick Swisher, for that matter. But Carlos Santana, yeah, he's batting 146. He still has a 303 on base. Which is just I can't wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
But a 268 slugging. His BABIP, his batting average on balls in play, is 162.
My lord, that's abysmal.
I mean, that's awful.
How does that happen?
Like, his career BABIP is 272. I mean, so
which
what's
still
that
like?
What that's telling you?
Average.
Yeah, what that's telling you is essentially his average should be 246.
We have got to, you know what? We need to write down a list of questions. We need to see if we can get a hold of Ben Jedlovic, because I want to know how much, if at all, the shift is playing into Carlos Santana's just total disappearance this season.
I can tell you, I saw on Sunday in person, I saw on Monday on the television, and maybe it was yesterday on TV. On Sunday, he smoked two balls right into the shift. And last night, he did it again. And I think he did it on Monday. I mean, I know that's not real evidence. It's anecdotal evidence. But I see it.
Right.
I just see him smoking balls into the shift. And you know when it happens, because he gets a real strong butt pat from Tito on the way into the dugout.
Yeah.
Because it's like, hey, man, you made good contact, you know? I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
Other than don't hit it at them.
So what do you think the Indians
hit
should
it where
do
they ain't.
What should Cleveland do with Carlos Santana at this point?
Well, see, so the game today was a day game, so I had to watch, and I use that in loosely, watch the game in the comment section of the Plain Dealer. And what I mean is that they have a reporter who's like, oh, Brantley doubled. Oh, so-and-so flew out, right?
Right.
Let me tell you, man, if that group had their way, they'd want Carlos Santana sent back to Columbus. Now, that is never going to happen. I mean, I don't think. What they should do is he should not be batting any higher than, like, seventh right now. I mean, honestly.
Right.
Like, when Garrett and I were at that game, it was disgusting because Swisher it's Santana and Rayburn were all batting ahead of Lonnie Chisenhall. It's like, you got to play the hot hand here, man. Like, I understand you don't want to take these guys out of the lineup. But when someone's hitting over 300 and someone's hitting below 200, you might want to reorganize things.
Right. So you think just lower it in the order until he figures out?
I think they need to drop him in the order and they need to DH him. They need to just tell him, you know, no third base. You can catch like 1 or 2 days a week when Yan Gomes needs a break. But right now, the only thing you need to worry about is figuring out how to put the cylindrical bat on the spherical ball.
Okay, all right.
I don't know what else to do.
Yeah, right. I mean, you're not.
I mean, when you look at his numbers, okay, he's being pitched almost exactly the same. There's almost no change in like whether he's getting fastballs or curveballs, you know, nothing like that. He is trying to find the batted ball stuff here. He's actually, and this is his patience. You know, this is how his on-base percentage is still 300. He's actually swinging at pitches outside of the strike zone less. It's almost the lowest number ever of his career. But he's also swinging at pitches inside the strike zone a little less. He's swinging the bat less than at any point in his career, which to me is kind of the guy that's caught in between. The only thing he really has confidence in right now is his eye. So he's just waiting it out, you know?
Right.
He's like, I'm not swinging until there's, you know, two strikes. Because the best thing I can do, he's probably thinking right now, is get a walk.
Exactly. Just
because I can't hit the ball worth a darn.
Yeah. All right.
His strikeout right here. He is. Well, they want to hide it from me, I guess. Here we go. He's got 195 plate appearances, and he struck out 41 times. Last year, he had 642 plate appearances and struck out 110 times. So he's striking out more, but he's swinging the bat less, and the ball's just not falling in, even when he's making contact.
Right.
So I guess the thing to do is you rule out everything else. You know, you take away third base and you take away this, you take away that, and you just say, listen, man, we really need you to focus on hitting. That's more than anything what we need from you.
Yeah. Okay. How about our next tweet mail? Can we go to that one?
Sure.
You want to tackle this one too? This one comes from Dan in Buffalo.
Oh, Dan.
Buffalo. Buffalo's a city in New York.
They're probably just melting off the last of the snow.
South of Toronto. East of Erie.
Actually, I think Erie beat Buffalo for annual snowfall this year.
Erie's number one. We're number one.
In total snowfall.
Yes, right.
Anyways,
not in anything else. Dan in Buffalo asks, how does Stephen Drew's signing with the Red Sox affect him going into next season?
Well, that's actually interesting. You know, Stephen Drew got signed by the Red Sox, I think it was yesterday, right?
Yes. Signed by the Red Sox yesterday, the Boston Red Sox. That's a city in Massachusetts.
Yes, on the coast. Well done.
Yes.
And interestingly, by signing with the Red Sox, the Red Sox don't have to give up a compensation pick because they're the ones that made the qualifying offer to Stephen Drew. So they were the only team that could sign him now without giving up.
Without penalty.
Yeah. But Dan's question is, how does it affect him next year? Well, apparently, you know, you talked about the CBA earlier when we were talking about the 10-day rule in the minors. Well, that pesky CBA is back because if you're not on a team's roster for the entire year, you are not eligible to receive a qualifying offer.
Ah.
Which is why the qualifying offer doesn't carry over when a team trades someone, right? Because you're not on that team's roster the whole year.
Right.
So Steven Drew, he's going to be unfettered next November.
Free.
Yeah.
Free bird, man.
He can go sign with the Mets or the Cardinals or who else needs a shortstop? The Pirates.
The Pirates, yes.
But, you know, yeah, he can do whatever he wants. No draft pick compensation.
No strings attached.
It cannot be attached to him.
That is the favorite kind of relationship. No strings attached relationship right there. Just in and out and done and no expectations from either side. Your business.
Wasn't that the name of like a very poor Justin Timberlake film?
No strings attached?
Yeah.
I don't know. IMDb it.
Natalie Portman was in it.
IMDb, no strings attached.
No, Ashton Kutcher.
That sounds like Ashton Kutcher would be in, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Justin Timberlake, he's doing good for
Portman.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Did not see that one.
Neither did I.
I did not see that one in Buffalo.
But
in Boston.
But I see that on the front of the little movie poster that comes up, Natalie Portman has no pants on.
Scantily clad, so Natalie Portman.
So there's that.
Yes.
But anyways, Steven Drew. So here's the lowdown, really. This is what it comes down to, right?
Right.
He signed for the prorated portion of the qualifying offer. So the qualifying offer was $14.1 million. He signed for 10 and change. So this cost him $4 million, basically, right?
Right.
Except that if he had taken the qualifying offer, he could have received a qualifying offer next year.
Right.
So depending on what contract he signs for next year, this might have worked out for him.
Could work out in his favor.
Because he knocked that out. That's not even a concern anymore. So, like, if he gets, like, a four-year contract, I would say this is a win, right?
Yes. That would, in some weird kind of, yes. That would be.
Right? It all worked out.
A win for him, I guess. Maybe Scott Boras knows what he's doing after all.
You might want to ask Kendrys Morales that.
Yeah, poor Kendrys Morales is like, hey, what about me?
maybe
he could go move to Buffalo with Dan.
Well, who offered Kendrys Morales? Oh, the Mariners. They're not.
Nope. Not going back there. They've got too many slow first baseman type players up there already.
Justin Smoke clocking up the works.
Corey Hart.
Oh, yeah.
They don't know what to do. Well, yeah, that's going to be it for the tweet mails today. And Jason, I think that's going to be it for our show today.
I think so.
It's time for us to wrap it up. So we'd like to thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes that you give us a rate and review. We like rates and reviews. Haven't had one in a while. I'd enjoy hearing what you guys have to say, positive or negative. Go ahead, lay it out there for us. Give us some stars and some rates and reviews. If you want to check us out on the web, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter, where I have to say, Jason, I'm putting out some pretty funny tweets lately. Kind of proud of myself. Go follow us on the Twitter box, @tristatebb. If you want to, you can check us out on Facebook, at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. So, for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you next week.